This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This is Paul Hawksby.
And Andy Jacobs.
And this is the H&J Daily with some of the best parts of this afternoon's show. Well, we were joined by Paul Hawkins. He was the creator of Hawkeye. Mm. And he's very proud of what it's achieved in sport. But not so much its role in VAR.
Yeah, it's a really interesting chat, I think.
He's got some work around, some ideas for how to improve it as well, his creation. So you'll hear from Paul. Andy Dawson. Sunderland fan, podcaster, and darts, got a new darts podcast with his son, and he popped up to talk about the great Luke Littler, big milestone for him last night. And what else did we do? We did something else, didn't we?
Martin Kellner was on,
that's right. Yeah, Martin was on good form today.
That's it, and a bit of a mea culpa from me at the
yes, time. Yes, oh, corker from Andy, yeah, to kick the show off. So here it all is. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Andy. Oh, so, what a game at the bridge last. What a game. What an exciting finish to the match. And I was just imagining you, Andy, up there in the Matthew Harding upper, bouncing up and down, going absolutely bonkers as Cole Palmer's goal, fourth winning goal.
Well, I would have done had I been there. Mea culpa.
Yes.
I left on 90 minutes plus.
Oh, so I'm such no, so you missed the penalty.
I was so angry with myself. I mean, what made it worse is the night before, I sat for the whole 95 minutes for Brentford against Brighton. The worst game I've ever seen. I didn't leave before the end, but this I did. I don't know.
Why did you do it, Andy?
I think mitigating circumstances. Very late kickoff. I had to be up early, like 6:45 is when I get up to do the show. And it just seemed really late, and I didn't think they were going to. It was just pathetic. I've been going to football long enough to know that I shouldn't have done it. And afterwards, it felt like a loss. I was so angry with myself.
So
I just, I couldn't get to sleep. I was like beating myself up.
Where were you? How did you discover that you'd even equalised?
Well, then I was walking, we were walking down Fulham Road, and you heard the noise in a nearby pub. It wasn't that loud, but it sort of sounded, I thought United had scored again, to be honest. And I checked the phone, and oh, all right, there's 3-3. Then so somebody said, oh, they've scored again. I checked it, oh, have they? Marvellous, but not for me. I mean, honestly, nobody could be, you listeners, you might be annoyed with me. You might think I'm pathetic, but I promise you, none of you could be more angry with me than I am with myself. Honestly, I feel cheated. I cheated myself out. You know, the number of times you go to football, and it's so disappointing, like Saturday, stayed the whole time for the Burnley game. So disappointed. Walk out of there going, oh, what did I do there? What a waste of an afternoon. And then I do that. It serves me right, you know, and I'm really, really annoyed with myself, but I've done it. I can't get it back. And whenever that moment's replayed, I'll always know that I wasn't there. And it's hard to take. It's pathetic.
Oh, no.
But anyway, it was a terrific game. I don't know what Ten Hag's looking at. I find him, he's no way he should be there next season. He said, I enjoyed how my team were playing. It was fantastic. We dominated the ball, we dominated the opponent, we dominated the game, but we made individual errors that cost us the game. You think, well, how about the individual error that actually got you in the game when you were 2-0 down and completely out of it?
Yeah, the Caicedo pass.
You know, when I left, I was preparing not to be critical of Chelsea. I was going to be critical of United. I mean, they play on the counter, but we gifted them 2 goals. I mean, they are so, they've got such good players, and they're so ordinary the way they play. Mm. It's so, you know, and you knew at 2-0 they'd have to get more on the front foot. And all season, whenever they've gone onto the front foot, United, they look a bit better as a side because that's what they've got. You know, their strength is in attack. And, you know, I just, who knows what's going to happen Sunday? I mean, you know, nobody'd be surprised if Chelsea didn't get a result with Sheffield United.
And they did pretty well last night.
Yeah, he did, and United beat Liverpool. But I feel if they lose on Sunday, I think he's gone at the end of the season.
Yeah.
Well, I'm critical of myself for leaving early, but I'm also critical of other fans for giving Mount the bird. I didn't get that.
He got slaughtered, didn't he?
No, a lot of us were applauding. I thought it was pathetic.
You left because you're poor, to paraphrase what was being sung to him, I think. What were they singing?
And they said, the United fans was singing, they left because you're...
Okay.
So right. I think it was a riposte to that. No, okay. The worst thing is when he came on and they booed him, and you just think, this is a boy that set up the Champions League winner, was top... helped us get to the top four the year we had a transfer ban and was player of the season twice. No one knows why he left. No one knows if he was offered a contract. None of you do.
Yeah.
Because he's never really talked about it. None of them have who've left. So why do that? It's really so poor. I felt bad about that. And I thought even Fernandes at the end, don't do that. You know, you've won the game. Don't do that. You know. Have a bit of sense about the whole thing. But anyway.
There we are. If only you'd been there to see it.
If only if I had. It feels like a loss.
Did it really? I was saying the least, because I said to you last night, because I did send you a message right on full time saying, I hope you didn't go early. And you said, I did. Don't talk about it tomorrow. And I thought, well, it'll soon change his mind.
I can't come on here and be so dishonest. You know, it would be terrible.
Stephen Mansfield says, mate, all the ranting and raving you've done against Chelsea, Andy, maybe it's karma.
Maybe.
Andy, my mate left Istanbul in 2005 at half time. So put that in perspective.
No, people have done it before. I'm not the first person to do this, but it doesn't stop you feeling, you know, so bad about yourself.
Yeah.
But I tell you the other thing, I came home and of course I watched the last 10 minutes. I don't understand.
Watched the last
well,
10
I had to,
minutes.
Didn't I? David.
From the very moment, the last, you actually queued it up, so it was the last moment.
I saw myself leaving.
You saw the upturned chair. Fantastic.
David Coote, I mean, honestly, what are you doing, mate? All day, that's a penalty.
Oh, this is the VAR.
Oh,
I mean, you have to put a bit of perspective.
It took so long.
It did take a long time. It was a penalty. I mean, I can't argue with that. Dallow was very clumsy, wasn't he?
Look, maybe 3-3 would have been a fairer result. I don't know. But, you know, but in the end, I can't think
it's
United deserved to win the game.
Both teams are so madly open. It's just a bonkers
game. This is what Chelsea are. You know, 2-0 up, I'm sitting there thinking, this isn't done. You know, if it got a third goal, it would have been done.
Yeah.
But they didn't get that. And then, of course... they do what they've done all season. They give the opposition a goal and then they collapse. They panic. Every time they concede another one pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're inexperienced. I feel for Poch in a way. You know, the fans are, you know, still not really having him. But, you know, I think he's done a good job. I mean, they've already reached last season's points total, you know, so it's definitely... 9 games to go, so it's a definite improvement.
I think you've got to stop saying things like, for all teams, this could be a turning point, because invariably it isn't. You never know. It could be.
It won't be. Because they're flaky. That's what they're going to do. You know, they've done it all season, so I don't see any difference.
Yeah.
Now. But, you know, those games teach you. You know, that's when the experience, you learn from games like that. So that's what they need to do.
Well, I suppose it does open the door, really. We've already had one leaving half-time at Istanbul. Probably wasn't the only Liverpool fan to have done that, considering they were 3-0 down. But that's the times you left early. Did you feel every bit as bad as Andy did? I've got the ultimate story, though. I've told it before, but I'll tell it again. This is a friend of a friend. It's true. 1966 World Cup final. She went with her dad and... Just before the end of the game, he said, "We've got this now. We'll watch all the trophy stuff on the telly. Let's get out, beat the traffic." Left before the end, left at 2-1 to England. The World Cup final, 1966.
Yeah, brilliant, isn't it?
So they were Arsenal fans. So she goes again with her Arsenal supporting dad to the 1979 FA Cup final between Arsenal and Manchester United. And in the dying moments, the old man says, "Oh, let's get off. Let's get off now. We won't worry about extra time. This is going to a replay, I can tell." She said, "Remember 66? He said, "Oh, no, it can't happen again. I want to beat the traffic." Of course, Alan Sunderland scores the winning goal in the 89th minute. So they were the kings of it. But if you still feel bad, as Andy said, every time he watches those two goals back, that Cole Palmer winner, he's gonna get this little chill down It's so bad. Because he'd walked out. If it is a turning point and it goes on to be that kind of Howard Kendall, Alex Ferguson moment, you go on and become, this was the moment. They'll be showing it every time they talk about Chelsea. They'll show that goal as the moment it all went right for Poch and he became the greatest manager of all time.
I can't do anything about it. It's done now.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
So we turn to Hawkeye, of course, an invention that's had a huge influence, not just on football, but a number of sports, tennis, cricket, rugby, etc. But the inventor of it, a man we've been speaking to over the years, well, it must be, as we said, about 20 years, really, since it was just in his mind's eye to get this away, is not massively proud of the way it's been used in football. Paul Hawkins joins us now. Good afternoon again, Paul.
Hello, how are you both?
Yes, we're not too bad. I mean, this was a piece in the Times, a chat you had in the Times. It's fascinating, really, to feel that in so many sports, you're very proud of what Hawkeye has done, but in football, not so much. And you point out that the idea of VAR was not to work like this. It was to be a challenge system initially, as it is in American sport.
Well, I wouldn't say so much as that. Firstly, I'm just representing my own views. I'm not involved in this in the Hawkeye from any perspective. So this is Paul Hawkins, not Hawkeye.
No.
And so I wouldn't say it was definitely going to be a challenge system, but it was part of the process to trial different formats for how it was going to come in. And the reviews was one of the options that the Dutch offline trials was planned to happen. And then, it didn't, and the circumstances kind of got ahead of itself. But I think it definitely is a trial that on other things that are worth experimenting with. And obviously FIFA wants to keep a level of consistency across football, across all of the world, which one I can understand, but that's then challenged against innovation and trying things to get the right balance between getting the decisions right and the flow of the game and the speed of the decisions, and at least allowing a reasonable percentage of goals to be in a situation that if they're not challenged, obviously fans can celebrate immediately and you can get on with the game.
It's clear it's not working as well in football as it does in other sports, isn't it? I mean, even the fact that you can't hear what's being discussed, whereas you can in rugby, you can in cricket. And it adds to the whole event, the whole spectacle. Why football feels that it's so nanny-ish, isn't it, that the fans can't hear what's going on?
Yeah, I think, that's the point of, I made the point that everyone says it takes too long. For me, I would say it takes longer than the patience of the fans. And you can address that in one of two ways. A, you can make it quicker, but B, you can increase the patience that the fans have. And I think them being able to hear what's happening and ideally see what's happening. Manchester United, Liverpool don't have a big screen. So there's some big Premier League clubs where the seeing part is practically quite difficult. But if you bring them on the journey, then I think their patience increases. It's not that, there are practical issues of why that's not completely trivial, but I think where there's a will, there's a way. And I think a period of time, again, particularly if there are environments where things can be tested and trialed and unearth some of the challenges with that kind of approach, that one can get to a point where, like in other sports, where that then is possible.
Yeah, and I think there's a feeling that with semi-automated offsides and kind of further technological developments in that area, that offsides will get better in terms of VAR. But you say that you think there's something that football could learn from ice hockey in terms of the rules around offside.
Well, so offside, there are trials going on, and something that Arsene Wenger has been championing around changing the rules of offside to how offside is defined. And kind of my contribution to that discussion is, Arsene Wenger's view is there needs to be daylight between the attacker and the defender. But that just sort of like changes the line, but it's still difficult to determine whether a player is offside or not. And if you kind of think the rules need to apply not just to the elite level where there can be technology, but to all levels of the game. So my contribution would think, well, if actually rather than making it the limbs of the body or all the parts of the limbs which can touch the ball, if offside was the torso, then it is actually easier for technology and therefore probably cheaper, probably more players in the market that could deliver it. Mm. But it's also then easier for linesmen as well, because the torso moves roughly half the speed of the legs. And it's easier to look along the line and see whether a torso is in front of somebody else than it is, a foot, which is, moving very quickly if it's the one that's not on the ground. And, equally, feet of attackers and defenders are, you know, if they're all close together, it's harder to see. So if you think if you can change the rules to ways that makes it easier to officiate, then you end up with less controversy in the first instance. And that kind of change doesn't really change the fabric of the game in terms of what's offside or not offside.
But where do you stand on time limits? I mean, a lot of people have suggested this might help. I mean, last night, the final penalty decision took so long and the fans are going mad because you can all see it and the players are going, well, if you've played the game, you know that's a penalty. So should there be a time limit?
I think the challenge, I think offline, clearly the way that VAR, the people are trained and whatever, they've got to get that balance right between doing it quickly and doing it correctly. Obviously, we had the Liverpool last year where in trying to do it quickly, then they made the wrong decision. So you know, and better to be longer and right than shorter and wrong. But, and I think the challenge, the problem with sort of like saying, right, you've got 60 seconds and if you haven't made the decision within 60 seconds, if you've ever watched Countdown or something like that, then as soon as there's that time pressure, it adds an additional stress to that VAR of making a clear and decisive decision. And actually part of the training of VARs is to get them into the right mindset so they don't, as soon as there is a decision, they kind of fall out of their comfort zone and become slightly panicked and less good at making a clear, rational decision. So that's, you know, ingrained into them. But I think the time pressure as well, that would be the challenge that would need to become overcome with that route of having a do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
I totally agree. No, I don't think time limits, I agree with Paul. I think it's wrong. You just put an added pressure. And if your team was sawn off because there was, you know, there was only 10 seconds left to make the decision.
I mean, sometimes, don't you, when you're watching, say, cricket, Paul, and I find it really irritating. The umpire's going, well, can I have another look? Can I have another? You think, you can see it. Why do you need another look? Well, it does drive you mad as a fan.
Yeah, and I think the training of VARs and probably the people that are VARs should, you know, that should definitely be part of the skill set of being able to make a concise decision having seen it only once. And I did notice one of the other points I made with the Times is from our experience of, you know, we do lots of VAR training of people around the world. And I think there's quite obviously there's an overlap between the skill set of being a VAR and being an on-field referee. But actually there's quite a lot which is different. And if you can, people that are good at looking at multiple screens, people from the broadcast world who have done that all their lives, and then give them the training of the officiating side of things, you actually make specialist VAR people who are good at making quick, concise decisions, having looked at information only once, but also obviously have the credibility and the knowledge of the game to be able to make the decisions right. And I'm not, like, obviously there are good VARs and the people that find that easier or not, but it is quite a different skill set. And you know, a referee who's good on the pitch, a lot of that's about his body language and how he sells decisions and his rapport with the players and all of that skill set of that side of things obviously isn't relevant to a VAR. So the skill set is quite different.
I think we've seen a bit of that in the match officials mic'd up, often assistant VARs who are getting aren't frontline referees marking each other's work.
Well, they don't have that agenda thing, do they, of being in the hierarchy and
they're often situation. getting the main VAR out of jail by spotting things and interpreting the rules. Just finally, you've got a bit of a challenge coming up. You're going to row the Atlantic, Paul, for charity, is that
tremendous.
Right?
I
appreciate you bringing that up. Yeah, we're training pretty hard. Me and my son, so life's because sport's been all my life, professional and personal, and I think all of the values I've developed have been through playing sport. So great opportunity for my son particularly to learn those values. But it's a pretty big challenge for us. We're raising money for David Dean's charity that helps young offenders who've been to prison get sporting opportunities so they can learn the same kind of life lessons that we're getting, that I've got through lots of sports. My son will get through this challenge. So the Twinning Project, I think, is a fantastic way to really kind of give young offenders opportunities to get involved with sport, learn some life lessons, so when they come out, they've got the experience and some vehicles to get on the straight and narrow.
Brilliant. It's not a race, is it? Because I wouldn't want a situation where you're crossing the line the same time as somebody else, and there's no real good way to record who got there first.
It is a race, but I think that, you know, there's sort of like many days between people coming into Antigua. So I think the chance of it coming down to photo finish is pretty slim.
Good to talk to you again. Thanks, Paul.
Take care.
Paul Hawkins there, the original inventor of Hawkeyes. He said he's not involved with Hawkeye now, but it's interesting to think that he was kind of partly responsible for opening the Pandora's box, and he's not massively impressed with the way it's been instigated. It always seems that football, more than any other sport, has completely tied itself up in knots with technology in a way that others haven't.
Because there's an arrogance about football that it thinks it's different and better than other sports.
Do you know what? I think there is an awful lot in that.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
The Luke Littler story continues. His win last night against Gerwyn Price. It goes to the top of the Premier League darts table.
Said he was upset about the Chelsea game.
He was, that's right. He realised, he'd gone one better than Manchester United. It is quite a story. Mm. And chatting about it on his new podcast on Serious Darts alongside his son, his seasoned podcaster, of course, Sunderland fan, you know him from Atletico Mints and Top Flight Time Machine, Andy Dawson joins us. Good afternoon, Andy.
Good afternoon, chaps.
Yeah, I mean, you're always waiting for those moments where it will go wrong and we sit here in 2 years. Whatever happened to Luke Littler? But there's absolutely no sign of that happening, is there?
There's no sign of that happening at all, no. The lad is, to use the word not too lightly, a freak.
Yes.
he's come along. But he's not an overnight success. He's been doing this. You've probably seen the footage of him throwing darts while wearing a nappy when he was 18 months old. It's a classic example of hot housing, I think they call it.
Yeah,
he's been doing this since he was a toddler. He's been playing at various levels of darts and winning relentlessly for years. So this kind of transition into him getting into the big league and to become top of the Premier League, to get into the final of the World Championships back in January, it hasn't really been a huge surprise. But at the same time, it kind of has, because he's he's just come from nowhere, and now top of the Premier League.
I'm going to make an odd comparison now, but Emma Raducanu.
You're going to say the same thing.
He does seem to handle the pressure and the expectation incredibly well, because as in her case, after that amazing Grand Slam win, there's an awful lot of pressure on you to keep performing. And we talked at the time during the Worlds about Kirk Shepherd. You know, there have been young players that have come through and they've not always trained on. But I mean, he seems so relaxed, doesn't he? As long as he's got his portable Xbox, he seems happy.
That's the thing. He's completely unfazed by it. He just goes from level to level. As I said, last year he was playing in the Mortis Super Series darts, which is kind of, you could call it non-league almost of in the darts pyramid. And he was winning week after week after week in that. And he's just got into the habit of winning and taking the step up into the World Championships and then into the Premier League. And he's still winning, and he's just got the mentality for it, and he's got the attitude, which is just perfect for it. He's unfazed by winning. He was playing in front of, I think, the biggest crowd he's played in front of last night. I think it was 11,000. At the arena in Manchester, and won the night. It's the second week in a row when he's won the Premier League night. Doesn't seem to be nothing to stop him.
No, absolutely.
It feels like he's being well guided. You know, that it hasn't gone to his head. He's obviously has made a lot of money since the World Championship. He has had a lot of deals, but I mean, compared to probably Emma Raducanu, not as much. I mean, she really was showered with a lot after that win, Rolex, all these big companies. You know, so that seemed to affect her. But also, of course, in tennis, it's easier to get injured than it is in darts, to be fair.
That is true, yeah.
Well, it is. But
I think so.
Yeah, go on.
Sorry, go on.
I was going to say, tell us a bit about the podcast as well. It's interesting that you do this, because darts does seem really on the up.
Well, I think so, yeah. I mean, I do it with my son, Oliver, who has been a huge dart fan for about 10 years. And I got him into darts back then about 10 years ago, because he was about 6-7, and I was really worried he would get into WWE wrestling. That's what kind of happens at about that age. And I just thought, I'm not having that. So I did a bit of manipulation and got him into the darts. And now we've been going to the World Championships the last couple of years. We've got the Premier League nights and all that. Brilliant. And he's just as obsessed with it as I am. And he's a kind of a wannabe podcaster in waiting. So we've joined forces and we're doing Unserious Darts, which we're trying to just not take darts too seriously, because there is a lot of humour and a lot of fun to be had in it. So that's the angle that we're taking with it.
Listening to your first episode, you were railing, Andy, about the walk-ons are getting longer. We've seen that in boxing.
Yeah, it's true.
And they're irritating in boxing, aren't they, now? So you're a bit worried they're going to start going down that route, the walk-ons.
It's a bit worrying. Yeah, you've got some of the players are coming down, they're taking selfies with fans, they're signing autographs. We had an example the other week of Luke Littler was accosted by a fan who had a FIFA app on his phone and wanted Luke to open a pack of players on his phone for him as he was walking onto the stage. That's a nice one-off thing. I thought that was good. But really, 30 seconds at the most, get down and get on the stage and get on with it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, you know, all athletes, all sort of professional sports people talk about like focus and just being in the moment. And so the idea of sort of setting up someone's game of FIFA for them seconds before you go and play, it does seem pretty crazy, doesn't it? I mean, how do you think the other players are viewing Luke? On the face of it, they're saying he's great for the sport. He is great for the sport. He's putting bums on seats. The great story. Its reach is going further than it ever has before. I think this is the most watched Premier League on TV-wise they've ever had. So, but I wonder if some of them just would like to put him back in his box at times, secretly.
I think there might be a bit of that, yeah, definitely. Because he's doing it a different way as well. He's like Wayne Mardle was talking last night after the Premier League night, that Luke is kind of ripping up the rule book in terms of, you know, how you'll finish on your last three darts. You check out the routes that you'll take to do that. He's not always taking the tried and trusted routes. He's just doing things off the cuff quite a lot, which I think is brilliant. It's brilliant, but some of the players I think might be getting a little bit annoyed. A, that he's getting as much attention that he is, and B, that he's just turned up the age 17 and he's beating everybody.
Yeah.
He has to be careful from that point of view. But look, it's great for the sport. There's no question about that.
So it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, when we talk about the greats and the power, etc., you know, at the moment he's on course, but it is very, very early days, isn't it?
Definitely. It's all about how he handles it, how the people around him, you know, look after him. But as we've said there, he does seem to have that inherent temperament, which just means he's just able to handle it.
Yeah.
And he can turn up and win without getting too stressed or anything like that. So, you know, all power to him.
Cheers, Andy. Well, good to talk to you. I did enjoy the podcast. Oliver is a chip off the old block. It's a very similar sense
very
of humour,
much.
So it's a lot of fun. So
Brilliant.
If you want a bit of a laugh and some darts chat, go and check out Unserious Darts wherever you get your podcast. See you soon, Andy. Thanks very much.
Thanks. Cheers, guys.
Andy Dawson.
Expectations will be massive at Ali Pally this year.
Yeah.
Just as a sidebar, because we're talking about fan interference, I don't know if you like the show Mandy with Diane Morgan. I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, I haven't watched this new series.
Yeah, it's fabulous. And this week's has got a snooker-based storyline that's really brilliant.
Excellent. All right.
You'll enjoy it.
I will go and check it out.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Some quotes from Ruben Amorim, a man who has been linked, the sporting manager who has been linked to jobs at Liverpool and Barcelona. Fabrizio Romano reporting that he has said, "I cannot guarantee that I will be staying at Sporting next season. I can't say that like Xabi Alonso did. We have time to discuss my future. We will do that at the right time. Now focus on winning titles and then we will see what happens."
Sounds
very much like a guy that feels... We spoke to Kevin... Was it Kevin Hatchard? I don't know what we did, didn't we? Yeah. And Kev felt... The time sort of felt right, you know. This could be the year.
He gave him a very good...
Reference. He is very highly regarded. So, there we are, Liverpool and Barca fans. It looks like he could be in the market if you think he's the man. So we asked you about leaving early. Andy did admit earlier on that he left last night.
And beat himself up about it.
Yeah, he has really beaten himself up about it, leaving it 3-2 last night with Manchester United still in the lead. John says, "I left Chelsea-West Ham match early in 1966-67. West Ham were leading 5-3 and the match ended 5-0. It wasn't until I got home that I found out the score," says John. So, yeah, that's right. You found out, you heard a cheer in one of the pubs as you were walking back to your car, didn't you?
So I had an idea, so I checked it. But then, you know, because I wasn't the only person that left early.
No, of course not.
I really wasn't.
No.
So, you know... Somebody shouted it out, and I think I knew then. But karma is an interesting thing. So we all get this because if you're in the media and you make, even if you're not in the media, if you just make a statement to your mates,
yes,
the karma can come back. And Gary Neville, and people were very quick to point out, who are the billion-pound bottle jobs now?
Oh, yes.
I thought, yeah, it's a very, very good point.
A dish best served cold.
You know, that's it. And again, last night at 2-0, they're going, Mason, what's the score? And you think, don't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's far too early for that. And of course, you know, when it was 3-2, that looked like a really bad idea.
They did, when they announced it. Does Carl still do it at Chelsea? Does he? But when they announced the players, did they say a warm welcome back to Mason Mount? Did they do that?
I don't think they did, actually.
Right, okay. Because the expectation was he was going to get some stick, was there? Really?
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised he looked fired up
in
for
commentary.
The game.
Darren Fletcher said, and I'm sure Mason Mount's coming and I'm sure he'll get a good reception, but Ali, our own Ali McCoy, was less convinced.
Yeah. I'd say he got a mix. Right. It certainly wasn't universal. Well, it sounded mixed.
Yeah, you could hear some applause, but predominantly it wasn't particularly pleasant.
No.
This comes from Gordy. "My two pals were at the 1999 Open Golf at Carnoustie. On the 18th, decided Jean Van der Velde would win. He was 3 shots clear. They jumped on the train back to Glasgow, got off at Queen Street, looked in the window of the nearby pub to find out the golf was still on and there was a playoff after old John had gone wading into the water, of course, back in the day. And they all missed the drama."
I did do this at cricket once. Do you remember? I think it was a test match. And maybe there were Andrew Caddick bowled England to victory, but I'd given up.
That's right, you left.
It was chronic.
You left. Would you have left headingly in 1981? Going to go home and get the first train back to London.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Martin Kellner, squad number 9, king of overnights with his week of sport on TV. Good afternoon, Martin.
And some good afternoon to you boys.
Tremendous celebrity endorsements this week for your podcast, Martin. I couldn't believe it.
Really?
It's unbelievable. Yes, AI, it's a marvellous thing.
Donald Trump's
a big fan of the...
And Joe Biden. Fan. Joe Biden loves it.
Okay. I'm all in favour of AI. been endorsed by all sorts of people.
Barry Fry, My Way. I've not... This sounds quite intriguing.
Yeah, well, on the basis that you can't have too many documentaries about Barry Fry, I've seen at least two. I can remember the sort of halftime rant to that one. Yeah. And I think he was in that thing called Big Run Manager. Some years. It was always hugely entertaining.
Yeah.
And of course, it's appropriate this weekend because Peterborough at Wembley on Sunday in the Bristol Motors Trophy against Wickham. Barry Fry's going to be there. It's his 79th birthday. So they've sort of treated him to a documentary, Barry Fry, My Way. Of course, it starts, obviously, with him driving his car, singing My Way. And then he runs through some of the highlights. The only person from Bedford, and I'm not sure this is true, but he says he's the only person from Bedfordshire ever to get a goal at Wembley. I mean, you'd really have to look back into the records for that. Across from David Pleat, apparently, and he knocked in. But
he was a huge prospect. I know a family friend was with him at Manchester United in his youth. And Matt Busby really rated him. He was a hugely, you know, a highly rated player. He was going to be a big star.
Absolutely. You know, played for England at various international levels, you know, as a youth player. Was at Man U, as you say, at 17, as an apprentice there. And they got, I mean, he's clearly viewed with an enormous amount of affection amongst the people.
He's a good man. We played cricket with him.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
He is a good guy, isn't he? Although, I tell you, they go around the various people who, you know, pay tribute to him and that sort of thing, and his birthday and all that. You know, Ricky J. Jones of Peterborough says that Gary Cottrell, who's the reporter from Sky Sports, says, I believe you do an impression of David Pleat, of Barry Fry.
Yeah.
And it entertains them all in the dressing room. And you think to yourself, I bet this, don't ask him to do it, because it's not going to be any good. Do you know what I mean? They all say, oh, yeah, we have a good laugh around the dressing room. And then they tell the joke, and you think, oh, well, fair enough. But he does the, it's really good.
Is it?
Yeah, I don't know whether he does anybody else. But certainly
you do a Barry. I won't put you on the spot.
I just do the same thing. Hello, mate. Tell Adrian. Tell Adrian this, that, or the other, whenever he can. Exactly.
No, slightly better. They're just slightly better than that.
It's all I can say. It's a bit like it's your job, by the way. That's the closest I get to. It's that key phrase that gets you into an impression. Yes. Like all great impressionists, Martin. That's how I work.
Yes, of course you do. It's marvellous, and we all respect you for it. But yeah, they talk to various people around the club. They go to Darren Ferguson, obviously, and says, you know, because he's now obviously Barry Fry's interest in Peterborough ostensibly isn't as huge as it was. He's not the owner anymore. He's not the manager. Darren McAntony, who we've heard on Talk Sport all week, he's now the main man there. And they interview him, and he's full of respect for Barry Fry. They interview Darren Ferguson, and Darren Ferguson says he's in every day. He's in every day. Yeah. And you think to yourself, does that mean, like, God, he's in every day? Yeah. Every flipping day, is it? You know, you've got sort of visions of Ricky Gervais in The Office, you know, when he left and he came in with his dog. Or Jack Nicholson in About Schmidt, if you ever saw that,
when he retired
and then went back to the office and they sort of kicked him out. But it's great fun. It's fantastic fun. He goes to some sort of youth match at Sheffield United as a guest. He's greeted by Tony Curry, of course, a couple of legends there. And then somebody in there had no idea who he was and says, oh, it's going to be big for us, say Barry White's coming.
It makes you feel special. Of course, he took George Best to Dunstable, didn't he, when
yes,
he played
yeah,
he took him
absolutely.
There, playing there in the
absolutely.
Southern League.
Oh, it's a fantastic story.
Well, I'm
really
going to watch that. It sounds very good.
Yeah, no, it's good. Excellent. It's on before, they're putting it on before the Bristol Motors Trophy.
Right.
I got my first car from Bristol Motors, as it happens.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah,
it's
they
good
were
running,
a
nice
keep, small.
Like, fully loaded.
Them, you'll probably get another one.
It was terrible. It blew a gasket. Pretty soon after I drove it out of the garage, it blew a gasket.
I think it's
I'm sure they're a much better operation now. It was a small garage in those days.
Okay, fair enough. Thanks for getting that off your chest. maybe they'll put it right if they're listening this afternoon.
It was very cheap, actually. The cheapest car I could find.
Defoe, Amazon Prime. I take it this isn't Daniel, this is Jermaine, is it?
This is Jermaine. This was actually briefly released as a cinema film. It's now on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
It starts with him in his big house he's just bought in the countryside, which obviously you as a Spurs fan would not deny him in a million years.
No. He used to have lived in a fairly big house near me before he moved. And we always knew, do you know, like the Queen, the flags up, you know, the Queen's in residence. There was always about 10 pairs of trainers outside the front door. That's how you knew if Jermaine was in or
not. He's got them all. He's still got all those trainers. There's a scene in it where they go in his room where he's kept everything. He's got the boots which in which he scored 5 goals for Spurs. He's got his England tracksuit. The house is pretty empty, which is sort of like a typical footballer's house. There's, you know, huge rooms and big French windows and big grounds. It's empty. He says, I'm planning to put a bar here, and I've got a games room I'm putting here.
He doesn't drink, Jermaine. He never has. So it's interesting. It's obviously sort of,
He's putting it all into the house.
Alcohol-free bar.
Yeah, so well, he was putting a bar there, a games room, little cinema, just in case anyone was in doubt that it was a footballer's house. He's putting all that. But it's a great story. I mean, clearly, I suspect as a Spurs fan, you view him with respect or something like that, reverence.
I'd always love to know if he played in the VAR era, how many times he really was offside, because he was offside a lot, but I've often wondered whether... Wait, if he goes back, we should relook at the Defoe years with VAR.
Don't do that. VAR classics.
The VAR classics. What a great show that would be.
It certainly would. Yeah. He goes back to Sunderland in the programme, and, you know, the tea lady gives him a big hug and all that sort of thing. And he's got a charity up there, and, you know, they're supporting his charity. Harry Redknapp's first scene is him sitting in a chair saying, Sandra, I could murder a cup of tea, which presumably was well scripted. And as I said, a lot of respect. He obviously fell out with Hammers fans, but that's not hard to do.
Have you forgiven him, Martin?
Well, I'm more or less forgiven him, but obviously at the time it was... and he talks about that in the programme. He does address it, and he blames his agent at the time, et cetera, et cetera, who said, you know, you've got to get that transfer request in straight away, otherwise you won't be playing in the Premier League. So, you know, it's all there, and there's lots of scenes of... The guy who was his coach at Senrab FC, which all sort of Ledley King played there,
John Terry,
Campbell, John Terry, Bobby Zamora, all those people played there. He's kept loads of footage, so there's a lot. I mean, I would say it's overlong. Do you need?
Is it Scorsese's Defoe?
It is very much so. If you think you need like 115 minutes on, it might be slightly less.
Did you enjoy the cup final against Spurs?
Not my words, it's not me saying this, it's Andy. It was a poor coming. I think the replay's Thursday night. It's like grabbing the replay Thursday night, like the old days.
Yeah.
Martin, so we should watch that, but it's maybe worth watching.
Yeah. Well, you should watch it, don't you?
Oh, I'll definitely watch it. That's two things I've got to watch. What with Barry Fry as well.
Yeah, and the Barry Fry thing's hugely entertaining. You know, the Defoe thing takes itself a bit more seriously than the Barry Fry thing, because there are obviously all those other issues, issue of race and issue of, you know, scenes with his brother who's a grime DJ, whatever that is, my lord.
Oh, okay.
Scenes.
Well, I take it you've got a grime DJing gig this evening, but when that's finished at 1 a.m. you'll be in the Talk Sport studios for extra time tonight, won't you?
Yes, we may very well play a little bit of grime.
Oh, good.
Some garage music.
Oh, okay, you know, tremendous. Overnight. So that's on from 1 a.m. to 6 a.m. And I've heard nothing yet from Bristol Street Motors, but if we do, we'll tell them to pop in this evening. Drop the keys off at reception.
Absolutely. I'd like my name on the side as well, like old school.
Yeah, that would be nice, yeah. Sponsors, Martin Kellner, broadcaster, king of overnights. Yes, 1 a.m., you can catch Martin overnight tonight and tomorrow. Thanks, Martin.
Yeah, cheers, boys.
The Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast.
Well, that's us, and you won't be leaving early again, will you?
No.
To the end of the season, definitely not.
Never.
We've got, among our guests next week, the actor Stephen Mangan, big Tottenham fan, and I think it's a bit Spurs heavy. Jake Lambert, comedian, also a Tottenham fan, popping in to see us next week. I'm sure there'll be other people popping up. It's a massive week of Champions League and more. We'll have Danny Kelly here on Monday. Do hope you can join us from Monday at 1. If not, the podcast, as always, will be available around 4 o'clock. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to the Hawksby and Jacobs Daily Podcast. Hear the guys every weekday between 1 and 4 p.m. on TalkSport.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.